The next case on our calendar is Trepnick versus Anderson. Do we have counsel for both parties?
I have not checked in the second party.
Okay, and your counsel for appellant?
I am, Your Honor.
And your name is?
David Schober.
Thank you. Were you expecting opposition this morning?
I had anticipated it. I think they're
perhaps
fine.
It is walking in the door. This is Trepnick versus Anderson. Are you here for that case? Thank you. And what is your name?
Allison Maxim.
And who do you have with you at counsel table?
Malintoy.
And she is an associate?
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Next case on the court's calendar is Trepnick versus Anderson. We're ready for oral arguments. Each attorney should be their name for the record before each leg of the argument so the recording has an identification with it. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. I am David Schoberg, representing the appellant, Kenneth Anderson. This is a case challenging the district court's restriction on appellant's parenting time without an evidentiary hearing, along with the relocation of minor children. This court should find in favor of the appellant for two primary reasons. First, the March 30th, 2023 order is clearly erroneous due to numerous mistakes surrounding its calculation of parenting time, and second, its failure to order an evidentiary hearing. So first, to address some of the clearly erroneous findings in the district court's order, it first held that appellant previously had 96 overnights, and then reduced this down plus holidays, and reduced this down to 92 overnights plus holidays. The court found that this was a minimal reduction, and had the court been right in this calculation of parenting time, it would have been correct in ordering this. However, there really is no dispute that the district court significantly erred in calculating parenting time.
Just so I'm clear, you're conceding that if the court had been accurate in its calculation of 96 to 92 as the reduction of 4 days over the year, you're saying that would have been, then the result would have been appropriate?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think there would be any question that a four-day reduction in parenting time would not be considered a substantial altercation, pursuant to both case law and just common sense.
I just want to make sure I understand your argument. You're not suggesting this is a less that your client has less than 25% of the parenting time.
With what was ordered in the no.
Okay, so it's the amount of the reduction.
Correct,
percentage of the reduction, that is your argument to this court, that was an inappropriate restriction, and that simple application of the best interests factors without an evidentiary hearing is not enough.
That is correct, Your Honor.
The other question I have for you is you mentioned that you were challenging the child's the move to Hayward. I don't see that in your brief.
So some of this stems from this idea, and Mr. Anderson challenged the relocation both in 2019 when the respondent moved across borders. There was a hearing held on that, and it was determined that the children's primary residence could be moved to Wisconsin. In the summer of 2022, he again became aware of the respondent's plans to move the children 2.5 hours away from their...
From Hudson up to Hayward.
The residence. And so he challenged that, and the court essentially granted this relocation to...
Well, I think the court said, I already granted that before when we...
And erroneously made
but
that
I,
decision.
But my question is, I don't see this argument in your brief.
Sure, Your Honor. And I think that comes down to the parenting time component of it.
But that's a problem.
I'm sorry?
I mean, that's a problem that you aren't challenging. The initial challenge, as I understood in the district court, is judge, don't allow her to move. And then there's in the response, the reason for it, as I understood the argument in the district court, was because that's going to substantially affect the parenting time arrangement.
Correct.
So That being the case, and the district court denying your challenge, your client's challenge to the move, it seems to me, in order to prevail, at least in my thinking, the way the steps work, you would have to challenge on appeal. Your client would have to challenge on appeal the district court's decision allowing the move.
But in allowing the move, the court also has to make the determination. It kind of goes into this two-step process as far as whether an evidentiary hearing is warranted when we look at the reduction of parenting time.
But there's nothing in your brief that challenges the district court's decision, whether with or without an evidentiary hearing, the decision allowing the move. And
correct.
Given the fact that your client premised its challenge to the move on the effect on parenting time, it seems that your client may have conceded that a move necessarily results in a change in parenting time. Practically speaking, it has to. But you're not challenging the move. You're only challenging the parenting time decision based upon erroneous findings of fact and the failure to give an evidentiary hearing on whether there was a restriction.
But the evidentiary hearing would have borne out the issues of whether the parenting time could be maintained or not. The issue becomes if the court simply grants this modification of parenting time without the substantial change in parenting time, I think it's probably understood that either Mr. Anderson needs a significant more amount of time during the summer, or that this move to Hayward, Wisconsin, was inappropriate.
But there's no challenge to the move. There were the substance of the challenge in the district court was, Judge, don't let her move, and then the parenting time dispute. Those were separate disputes.
Correct.
Only one of which is challenged on appeal.
And correct. So this is very simple because there was no evidentiary hearing where both those issues could have been addressed. And I think it's simply addressed simply with the parenting time dispute and the clearly erroneous findings. So the question is I think what the issue is if...
If you were to prevail on appeal based upon the arguments in your brief, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, if you think I'm wrong as a matter of law, then what you would win is a remand to the district court on the question of parenting time, not on the question of whether anyone's allowed to move. And if that's the case, and the move's already occurred, and it's baked in, and your client has already conceded that a move necessitates a change in parenting time, a significant change in parenting time, I think was the argument that was made to the district court,
then why
do we remand?
But correct me
if I'm wrong.
So I think the issue is that he's entitled to have an evidentiary hearing that addresses the best interests and how to best maintain and what the appropriate parenting time schedule is. Unfortunately, we have a situation where the respondent in this case, again, moved across the state without an agreement of my client to change schools, for example, which violated his joint
legal custody rights. But that's not a challenge on appeal. I mean, I think that's a decent argument, but I don't see that in your brief, and I don't see that in the arguments that you've made and the issues that you've presented to the court.
Correct. And I think those are all things that should have been addressed in an evidentiary hearing as part of the motion. He challenged it. The respondent brought a motion saying, hey, I want to reduce his parenting time. There should have been, that should have preceded any moves. This motion, you don't move to change.
That may be so, but that's not an argument that you've presented.
That is correct, Your Honor. So we still result in a situation where it's really clear we have erroneous findings. He was still deprived of the evidentiary hearing that he was entitled to address best interest standards.
That's the part that I'm puzzling about. So if the move is already baked in, not challenged, not a subject to reversal, because it's not before us, if you prevail on behalf of your client and you get an evidentiary hearing, it's based upon the circumstances that exist that aren't challenged, which is she's living in Hayward, your client's living in Woodbury, and the question then is, what is in the best interest of the children under that scenario? And it seems already conceded by your client that a change in parenting time has to result from the move.
Right. Depending on how the court addresses the change in the parenting time schedule and exchanges where the parenting time occurs and so forth. Okay.
What's the percentage of reduction?
What is the percentage?
Of parenting time between the 2021 baseline order and this 2023 challenged order.
Sure. So the prior to March of 2023 or through the summer of 2022, my client had 5 overnights of out of every 14 days. That's roughly plus 2 weeks of vacation time plus holidays. That 5 overnights is 35.7% of the overnights. The new parenting time schedule, if we take the 99 days that's proposed by the respondent in this case, is a reduction down to 27.1% overnights, which is just barely over the statutory minimum. This is a 24% reduction.
So that's somewhere in between. I mean, we've got case law that talks about a 7% reduction not being a restriction, but a 50% reduction is a restriction requiring an evidentiary hearing. Why should we conclude that the percentage reduction here falls into the latter category, that we should view it as significant requiring our view it as a restriction that requires an evidentiary hearing?
Sure. So that's respondent's best case scenario is a 24% reduction. It jumps up to a 31.4% if this new order doesn't mention anything in regards to the summer, 2 weeks of summer vacation time. And the judge doesn't address that.
Oh, doesn't this order kind of go back to 2019? I mean, I thought that...
Well, the judge specifically in her findings says this is your parenting time plus holidays. Doesn't mention anything with regards to vacation time. It's ambiguous as to whether that vacation time survives. Typically, we'd see it, you know, any other parenting time provisions and otherwise modified herein survive this order. We don't have that. So in this case, we have a holiday schedule, we have a regular schedule, and there's nothing addressing the vacation schedule. But what we have here is somewhere between the 24 and 31%. I think the question you have is this a substantial change?
Why should we view that as a restriction? Are there unique circumstances here that would tell us or lead us to the principal decision that this was a restriction?
Sure. So part of it is a percentage, right? We're looking at amount of parenting time. I would argue that 24 to 31% is absolutely substantial. And quite frankly, the best way I can compare it to is any individual that is looking at a 24 to 31% increase or decrease in their salary would certainly find that substantial. Anybody that would see a 24 to 31% reduction in the amount of parenting time they get to spend with a child is certainly substantial, even objectively. I don't think anybody would dispute that. Somebody might not appreciate or like, or they may even think that a 5 or 7 or 10% reduction or increase is not very substantial.
But, the question
but here we're way above and beyond that.
But the question, I think, as a matter of law, isn't whether it's substantial, but whether it amounts to a restriction. I think those are different things. It seems to me that your argument, the district court got it wrong in concluding that the change in parenting time was minimal in regard to overnights, and the district court said this factor weighs in favor of the petitioner, that is the effect of the arrangement on the ongoing relationships between the parent and the child and the siblings, in this case just parent and child. But your brief doesn't challenge the district court's best interest findings, of which that is one. Your argument is only it's a restriction and therefore you're entitled to an evidentiary hearing.
Correct, based upon those best interests. But most of those best interests, that best interest determination should have been made after an evidentiary hearing. And so if an evidentiary hearing is issued, then the district court, through testimony, can determine what is in these child's best interests as far as a parenting time schedule. So I think the issue is all those findings, specifically the finding tied into, hey, this is a minimal modification, is certainly clearly erroneous. But the court also relies on...
That is a solid argument that doesn't appear in your brief because you didn't challenge the best interest findings. Your brief only challenges, as a matter of law, whether this is a restriction entitling, as a matter of law, your client to a hearing. And I'm puzzled. I mean, it makes it difficult, I think.
Okay. Sure. I think the court also erroneously... I think the whole order is replete with errors, and so it was a question such as the primary residence and not being able to relitigate that was another factor that the court relied on. that simply misinterpreted the law as far as primary residence. And in fact, the respondent brings this issue that in her brief that, hey, primary residence was established, ergo, respondent can basically choose where to relocate these children, regardless of whether it affects the appellant's parenting time. And that's simply not what primary residence either was intended or is. And the reliance is on the 2019 order, which just says authorize the respondent is permitted to move the primary residence of the children to Hayward, Wisconsin. And the district court then relies upon that, and the respondent then relies on this as a basis to significantly alter appellant's parenting time. And the judge, again, in its findings, again relies upon this and says, we're not going to relitigate this. It's already been decided. Well, this isn't a relitigation of that. This was a litigation of the current circumstances that, based upon the respondent's relocation, merited an evidentiary hearing. And so this reliance on both this primary residence, which is clearly misplaced and is quite frankly erroneous, in addition to the severe restriction in the parenting time of my client, warranted the evidentiary hearing to address these best interest factors. So I see my time is ending, Your Honors. I would simply ask that the court reverse and remand this case so that the district court can make appropriate findings and order an evidentiary hearing depending upon the findings that it does make. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Allison Maxim, and I represent Sean Trebnick, formerly known as Sean Anderson, in this appeal. On behalf of Ms. Trebnick, I respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's March 30th, 2023 order, which modified appellant's parenting time. The district court did not abuse its discretion when it found that the children's best interests were served by granting appellant a parenting time every other weekend from Friday to Monday during the school year and every other Thursday through Monday during the summer with an additional 14 days during the summer, which is stated in the order.
Well, the district court was way off in its math in its best interest findings, isn't that so? I mean, the district court thought there was a reduction of 4 days in the appellant's overnight parenting time when really it was more like a month, a 33-day drop.
It was 31 days, and the district court
From 131 days to 98 days. It's a 33-day drop.
Okay.
That's significant, isn't it?
No, and I'll get to that, the reason why. That is not significant.
The district court thought it was a minimal drop. The district court said this change represents a minimal drop regarding overnights. The district court based that finding on its belief that there was only a 4-day difference between the previous arrangement and the one that it was ordering.
It's our position, Your Honor, that that finding is harmless error. The court had a math error.
You agree that it's error, correct?
Yeah, it's wrong. Her math is wrong, for sure.
Well, not just the math, but the idea that it's minimal.
I think that's debatable. And
if your client had lost 31 days of time, mm-hmm. I assume you wouldn't be agreeing that it's a minimal reduction.
No, I wouldn't agree to that. I think in the totality of the circumstances of this case, when you're looking at Ms. Trebnick, who in the judgment and decree was awarded sole physical custody, where the decree went so far as even to define what that meant, sole physical custody, she
has... That's not where we are. We don't go from there. We go from the standing order.
Yep, I get that. I'm just saying, from the beginning, appellant had 72 overnights per year, according to the decree. That got changed by Judge Hoffman in 2019, so that he had 84 days. That got changed by a parenting consultant, so he had 130 days. Judge Hoffman found that it was in the children's best interest for Ms. Trebnick to relocate to Hayward, Wisconsin. You're absolutely correct. That is not challenged here on appeal. Primary residence was established in Hayward in 2019. 84 overnights per year for appellant. As the sole physical custodian with primary residence, Ms. Trebnick chose to move to Hudson during the pandemic. She was there. Parenting consultant increased appellant's parenting time, and they were following that schedule. After attempts to have a discussion with appellant about a move back to Hayward without getting any sort of reasonable response, she moved back to Hayward, 2.5 hours north where she had lived before, where the children had lived before. Appellant challenged her move. That is not, primary residence is not an issue here. What's an issue?
Well, the issue is the amount of the reduction, whether it's a restriction or not. Why wouldn't we conclude that a 24 to 31% reduction is a restriction that requires an evidentiary hearing?
Well, I would turn your attention to the Danielson case, which is referred to in our brief. In that case, mom had sole custody, just like this case. Mom moved to Montana. Dad had 52 overnights a year every other weekend with his children before mom moved, and had between 14 and 28 days of parenting time over time, because the court granted him parenting time starting 2 weeks per summer, then 3 weeks per summer, then 4 weeks per summer. So 28 days of parenting time. That was a reduction from 52 to 28. Both of those are restricted under current statutes, but this court did not find that was a restriction in the Danielson case. There are cases that are mentioned in both briefs where parenting time restriction of 7% isn't something that requires an evidentiary hearing. Parenting time restriction of 50% does. We're dealing with a 24% reduction in a case where the historical parenting time was significantly less than the presumptive 25%.
You keep referring to the historical parenting time,
yep,
as if that's our baseline.
It's not your baseline. But my position is that this court looks at each case in particular. You have to look at the particular facts of the case.
So in this case, you have a 25% reduction in parenting time that the district court mistakenly believed was only a 4-day reduction.
It was a 24% reduction.
So shouldn't our analysis as to whether it was the district court saw this as a restriction include the district court's erroneous understanding of how significant the drop was?
No.
Why not?
Because the district court's math error is a math error, and it's harmless error. The district court went through. So we're all on the right track here. There's two prongs: the reason for the change and the amount of the reduction. We're talking about the amount of the reduction, but we can't forget about the reason for the change. So the district court made detailed findings of fact about its reason for the change. And what it found was the children were involved in more extracurricular activities in Hayward. They no longer missed out on them due to appellant's noncompliance. The children rekindled past relationships with friends. The children's stress reduced because of their active engagement in Christian upbringing that petitioner established since birth. The reduction of children receiving conflicting messages about religion, that was reduced. The schedule supports stability for the children. The party's daughter transitioned to a new therapist in Hayward, and therapy was going well. Appellant behaved aggressively on social media and towards Ms. Trebnick in writing. The children's safety and developmental needs are best suited if the majority of parenting time is with petitioner. That's what the court found. Ms. Trebnick had been the children's primary caretaker since birth. Appellant traveled, and he agreed to a limited parenting time schedule of 6 days per month due to his travel in the decree. Ms. Trebnick scheduled all of the children's appointments and activities. Children missed activities when they were in appellant's care. The children previously lived in Hayward and were familiar with it, getting good grades. The children living in a stable home with Ms. Trebnick was to their benefit.
How confident are you that the district court's allocation of parenting time would have been the same, let's say for the summer months, if the district court was aware that the reduction was not merely 4 days, but was closer to a month?
I can't get inside Judge Meonger's head, Your Honor. Perhaps she would have granted appellant more parenting time in the summer. We attended appellant mediation. I can tell you there were offers that were discussed. And
that's not on the record, is it?
I get that.
Let's not discuss what was bandied about and didn't result in a settlement that I don't think is appropriate for our review.
Well, the point is that Judge Meonger gave appellant additional time during the summer. I don't know if it was because she thought it was 96, if that was a mistake in her mind, and she would have given him more had she thought there was a bigger difference. I don't know. What I do know is that there's a two-prong analysis. One is the amount of the reduction. Two is the reason for the reduction.
Can I ask one question about the amount of the reduction? We're saying 24%, 25%. We have a law that says parents shall receive 25% minimum. I mean, to me, that says 25% is a significant number, such that a 25% reduction would likely be a restriction. I know we don't have a case saying what does 25% look like and where does it fall between 7% and 50%. I don't have a difficult time anchoring that 25% to the minimum parenting time and saying in the legislature's view, a quarter of the time is a big deal.
Sure.
Is that wrong to look at it that way?
To look at it in a way where
25% reduction in parenting mm-hmm. time is a restriction that requires an evidentiary hearing.
I reading all of the case law and applying it to this particular case, no, I don't agree, respectfully. What I am submitting to this court is, like with all family court cases, or many, many family court cases that involve parenting time, the district court has broad discretion. Judge Meonger got to hear the parties, got to read everything, hear them, and she made her decision.
Based in part on the understanding that it was only a small change.
That may be. Again, I can't get into her head. I know what her order says.
We don't have to get into her head.
It's in the opinion, this change in parenting time schedule
is minimal regarding overnights each year.
And I would submit to the court that that is, again, harmless error because there are two prongs. It's not just the numbers we're talking about. It's the reason.
And you're certain that if we were to reverse and remand, saying reconsider your decision because it's based on an assumption of a minimal reduction, it's actually 25%, you're confident the judge would say no change, as opposed to, well, I didn't realize that. Perhaps he should have more days in the summer when the children are not in school.
I would anticipate that the judge would reach the same conclusion because she can look at the amount of the reduction and she can look at the reasons for the reduction. So she went through all of the reasons. To your point about it being a 24, 25% reduction.
Well, the reasons for the reduction was the move, as I understood it. And you listed the reasons why the move made sense to the district court, and the district court agreed with your client's intent to move.
That's correct. Yeah.
Those are separate issues, aren't they?
I don't know if they're separate issues. The reason for the change in parenting time was because Ms. Trebnick, the children's sole physical custodian who had primary residence, moved.
Yes.
The court then analyzed all the reasons for the move, so which I listed. So the court based its decision on all of the reasons that were presented to her. The appellant is bringing up erroneous findings, which I did not see in his brief. Besides the math error, all of the other reasons related to the children's best interests are what the court relied upon. What I submit to this court is that in parenting time cases, the court often will indicate in its opinions that the decisions of the district court are fact-specific to a particular case. And here, the court has to analyze this particular case. And what I'm asking the court to do is to look at, and when I say historical, Ms. Trebnick was always the primary parent. Appellant, in the beginning, had less than that statutory presumptive minimum.
When you say historical,
yeah,
you're not talking about 5 days before this order.
No, I'm talking, I mean.
Because 5 days before this order, he had a full month's more of parenting time.
He had 130 days of parenting time. Yeah, that's right. Correct. So
I don't understand why that should not be the focus, the primary focus of our consideration, rather than the way things were 10 minutes after the divorce.
Because I think the court has to look at the totality of the circumstances in this particular case. If you want to look at just that 130 and the reduction, okay. That's not what the law says to do. The law says to look at the percentage of the reduction.
It also says
and the reason.
Can ignore a district court error if it's de minimis, if it's a $5 error. Here you're talking about reducing parenting time by the minimal amount that must be imposed, and the district court doesn't appear to have been aware of it. How would we say that's de minimis? We should ignore that part of the equation. Because it is a two-part equation, and it seems like the district court got the first part wrong. And we need the district court to be making the decision, not this court.
I would submit to the court that these cases are reviewable on a case-by-case basis.
Understood. And your time is up.
Thank you
for your argument. We have a few minutes for rebuttal if you have any points you'd like to make.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll just be very brief. One thing that was brought up repeatedly was sole physical custody, primary residence, historical. This motion that Mr. Anderson brought was not an attempt to change primary custody of these kids. If he had, he would have met certain criteria, which then, if he would have made a prima facie case, would have required an evidentiary hearing. Something else a respondent said is, again, the judge, I think her exact words were her testimony then backed up or backstepped on that to say, heard the parties through their pleadings and made those findings. Again, she made those findings based upon an erroneous computation of parenting time. But what is not acknowledged in what is problematic is that significant reduction in parenting time and how that might affect the kids. Respondent went through all, there's some beneficial elements to the move. There might be some beneficial aspects of this parenting time schedule, but because the judge believed that there was essentially no change in the parenting time with dad, court essentially ignored the fact that those children's access to their father has been significantly reduced.
Well, the court also makes a finding about the significant amount of time that your client forfeited parenting time, and that's part of the same finding on timing.
Correct, Your Honor. And pursuant to Minnesota Statute 518.175, I believe subdivision 5, The court has the authority to restrict or, to again, restrict parenting time either based upon endangerment or the lack or failure to exercise parenting time only after an evidentiary hearing. So if, in fact, he was missing...
Back to whether this is a restriction or not.
Yeah. So unless the court has any other further questions.
All right. I don't see any.
Thank
so
you,
we'll conclude there. Thank you for your arguments and briefing. The matter is submitted. You'll have a decision from the court within 90 days.